It is the year 2025. And instead of looking forward like most people do, we're looking back.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we're talking about the
2025 sounds made up.
It does. Yeah, it's very much like that Conan O'Brien get in the year 2000. You don't remember that?
No.
In the year 2000.
No. No, but I'd like you to sing again.
Well, if you're gonna guess, I have Whitney here with me. And how are you feeling about the year 2025?
Okay. I don't really love odd years, but 25 I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Like I'm okay with that sounds like a good like percentage, 25%, yo.
Yeah. I think if you were born in the year 2000, like it'd be so great to basically have your age of the year that you're currently in, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. What about 2024 for you?
It was good.
So yeah. I feel like, so yes, we're talking about favorite films, 2024. Here in LA, I'm going to have Mark Blitch join me. It's become a kind of annual tradition. He sees way more movies than I do, believe it or not. But I think you'll really enjoy the conversation because we have different lists. But I definitely want to have Whitney on here, one, because you joined me in a lot of the podcast recordings. I think for us, we went to the movie theater quite a bit. Looking at our list, I mean, now granted, it was a lot of family-oriented films, but there was a couple of films that we got to go had some date nights. Like we saw Twisters, we saw some of the bigger blockbusters,
The Fall Guy,
and we saw Wicked, and you know some other holiday.
Not on
tricks.
A date.
No, one wasn't a date night, but I think we visited the theater more than past years for sure. And I think that's partially probably with our girls a little older and everything. But so before I jumped in with my conversation with Mark, I just want to say I did a lot of homework for Whitney and actually created a list of all the movies she saw in 2020.
Much. I don't remember anything about titles, and I'm looking at this. He made me a list, a cheat sheet of all the movies, and it's like I don't know, 20 movies, and I don't remember. I mean, I remember them as I'm reading them, but I also have to say, like, these are terrible movies in 2024. Like, I like them.
What stands out as a terrible movie?
Well, I mean, like, maybe I just saw bad ones, but like. I like them okay, but they were like, just like, like threes. They were all threes in my book.
Yeah.
So like If and Unfrosted and Brat, like, I don't even know that I saw some of Harold and the Purple Crab. I've obviously saw The Wild Robot. They're good, but none of these are like, oh my gosh, that was my favorite movie ever.
And so. I think a lot of people would probably say that about this year. Not a whole lot of truly great movies, but I do think there were a lot of just very good movies. Like Twisters, not the best movie ever,
fun,
but it was really fun. And so I think if any,
but none of these, like I have a few that I would say were my favorite, but they're not gonna win an award.
Right So with this list that I create for you, is there just one that stands out to you
that I just love,
that you would, yes, this was my favorite movie of 2024?
There's three that would rise to the top. Do you want to know all three of them, or I have to pick one?
Let's hear the three, and then let me guess what your number one would be.
Of those three. Oh, no. Okay, I'm going to decide by the time I play.
Okay.
Okay. My three would be Challengers.
Yes.
I really enjoyed Challengers.
Yeah.
Do you want me to talk about it more, or that's all?
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I just thought that the passion in it and the it just stirred up a lot of, like, it was intense.
And then Wicked.
Wicked is notably the best movie on there.
Right.
Like, can I have four?
Yeah.
Okay. The Fall Guy. I love The Fall Guy.
Yeah.
And then the best Christmas pageant ever. Those are my four.
Okay.
If I had to pick four. I mean, there's other ones I really liked. The Fire Inside was an excellent movie, and it's probably the best made movie on the whole list.
Yeah.
Wicked and then Fire Inside, but you didn't even see it, so it didn't speak to you.
Well, I went and saw Nosferatu.
That was a bad life choice, because the Fire Inside was excellent.
Well, before, tell people a little bit about The Fire Inside, because I do feel like it had great reviews. Maybe a movie that kind of slipped underneath the radar.
It was a true story about the first ever American gold medalist in boxing. And she was from Flint, Michigan. And it was her story. And it was amazing. And I took the girls and my mom and all loved it. And we weren't people that like boxing. Like, we didn't want to see somebody's mouth like
slow bend motion,
happen. There was no sweat and there was no blood. I mean, she sweat, but not like that. Not like mouth shattering. But it was great, and I highly recommend checking out on whatever it's going to stream on. But it was great.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So out of those ones that listed, I just as a teaser, all those made my top 10 this year.
Great.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to guess your favorite one is The Fall Guy.
No, because it didn't even make my, it got added at the end.
Oh my, really?
Uh-huh.
Part of it, I talked about it a little bit later.
I don't know.
We watched it again. Like, we actually showed it like to your parents, I think.
Yeah, you convinced me.
I wasn't trying to convince you.
I know, but the other ones are recent that I saw them. Yeah. So
what was your top one?
Well, I just love the best Christmas pageant ever.
Yeah.
But that was my favorite movie. It made me feel, but Fall Guy's good. And I mean, Wicked's wonderful, but I would probably tie those two, Fall Guy and Best Christmas Pageant Ever, and then Wicked, and then Challengers.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All good recommendations. Well, I'll just go ahead. I'm going to toss to this conversation to Mark Blitch, and then hopefully you'll still want to do these podcasts with me in 2025.
As long as you give me this handy dandy list, I'll do it anytime you want.
The key to having Whitney on as a guest is prep for her.
Yeah, I'm not going to do the homework. This is your show.
It's true.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. I am so happy to welcome in Mark Blitch. How are you doing?
Doing great, Nathan. How are you?
Yeah, there's no better time to talk about the best films in 2024 in late January of 2025.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but like we were talking earlier, I mean, the fact that we're just in this like right now, I mean, I think that's an accomplishment in itself. So yes, one of those reasons is super exciting. Is that you are in the running in this Doritos commercial, top three video right now. So, yeah, just tell us everything.
Everything. Okay.
well, most importantly, yeah, for sure. Like, every day you can vote. So, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Telling people how to do that.
So, yes. So, a couple buddies of mine, one that you did you know Tyler at all? Or did you not?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, we all work on projects, and he's also been a guest on the
podcast. That's right. I knew that. So, yeah, I had a buddy of mine who just moved back into town. You know him, Tyler Johnson. He had just moved back into town with his family, and I had been looking for a reason to work with him, and a friend of mine told me, hey, you should do that Doritos commercial thing. I've seen a few of those pop around, and I had done like two submissions maybe 10 years ago. Didn't make the semifinals or anything. And the timing was nice because my wife and my son had to go out of town for a band thing, my oldest son. And so while they went out, you know, and I had written the script kind of like, I had just kind of thought of an idea, didn't think much of it. But just, you know, game nights, universal for everybody. So I wrote the charade script and then recruited my son. He always wanted to be in my videos. I had my oldest son be in a viral video about 11 years ago. I always felt like I owed it to him to have his own crack at it. And so, kind of bribed, two actors, Tyler and Cass, I'll say, hey, come shoot this, I'll make you some steak and we'll just kind of have some fun, really just as a creative exercise. When you're in video and you're doing stuff in the business world or the corporate world, or just for your job, sometimes it's good just on a weekend just to kind of do one for you. And so shot for like 4 hours. It was right when the sun changed, which was bad timing, so I think it was dark by about 5, and shot it, edited it, didn't think much of it. Once I submitted it, I was like, well, it's out of my hands now. And then I started seeing a bunch of other videos, pop up on the Doritos website, DoritosCrash.com. And some of them were really good. And I'm like, well, that was fun. There's no way I'm going to make it. So I'll have fun. And so then I got contacted that I was one of the 25 semifinalists, which I thought, oh, that's cool. You know, I have like a 1 in 8 chance now to make the finals. And then I heard that I made the finals, and then I had to be quiet about making the finals, which was ridiculously hard because I'm what you call a vocal processor. And then I was able to kind of share that with the rest of the, you know, the rest of my friends. And so now I have a 1 in 3 chance of winning $1 million, going to the Super Bowl and having the commercial play during the Super Bowl. So, you know, all those hypotheticals where you always kind of think, what would you do if you had $1 million? Like, it's much more stressful when you have a 1 in 3 chance and you kind of have to, you kind of almost irresponsible not to talk about what you would do with $1 million. And so, not to mention just people saying like, hey, remember the little guys and, you know, give me money when you win. Which is always fun to have those conversations, but, it's, you know, I'm super thankful for Doritos kind of giving the opportunity. It's a lot of fun. It's a dream come true, obviously, to be up for something that could change your family's life. And, my son's kind of a rock star at his school, which is really nice. And, now he can't ask me for anything else anymore. He did say though, he's like, Dad, if we win, I want to get the $100 Pokemon pack at Game Nerds. And I'm like, all right, I think we can make that work. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And I'm not saying this just because I know you and Tyler that were involved with it, but it's so funny. I've always loved just especially commercials that lean on those comedy instincts and everything. But yeah. I mean, I just loved it from the concept. The delivery is so fun and memorable. And I, no lie, you know, I showed like lots of friends and my kids just because, you know, oh, hey, look, these are my friends. But like, it's a great commercial because even after it was over, I mean, I've heard them go Doritos. Like it's yeah. Very like from the, what an ad is supposed to do, it's perfect. I mean, I feel like it once people would see it, like they would have that cadence in their life. So I just thought it was just, I was like, oh, that's a great concept. And the fact that I think from just, I don't want to say that it was like super low budget, but just work what you had, it's just perfect, you know? So, really encourage, how do people go vote?
So yeah, so you can vote once a day, every day until January 28th at noon. I believe it's noon Central Time. And so what I'm encouraging people to do is whenever you kind of get up and have your first cup of coffee, 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m., whatever, set a reminder on your phone to go to DoritosCrash.com and vote for charades. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to tell people is just that, just set the alarm. The alarm doesn't take long to set an alarm, especially one for every day. And as long as it's not waking you up at 6:30 in the morning, alarms are okay. But I would suggest making the alarm sound something very pleasant because you want, you know, I want people to think that it's fun to vote for me, you know? And so don't do that really, you know, the default Apple alarm clock, which is really obnoxious. Find something very pleasant, something that reminds you of Doritos and of me.
Yeah. And it's also, I just want to say super easy too. It's not like one of those contest things where you have to fill out it's like long survey or whatever. You just hit vote, you put in your email, and you won't get spammed unless you clicked and you want to get spam, but super easy. So literally like a 5-second process. So,
there's no reason not to do it. It's basically what I'm trying to say. Like the excuses that people may have, there's really, you know, you just don't want to do it and you don't want, you know, a suburban dad to take care of his family. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. And I mean, and you don't want God to look down upon you in disfavor either, you know, so you might as well do it.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I'm not sure if that's necessarily like theologically accurate, but you don't, but just in case that somehow me winning $1 million and going to the Super Bowl is somehow in line with God's plan, I don't know. then go, go ahead and just do it just to make sure. I'm going to go to hell for that. Yeah.
No. But yeah, yes, we're obviously talking about here, but I'll put a link in the notes as well so people can go out and do that. So, okay. So just real quick, I don't know what 2024 looks like for you as far as movies go. I generally, for me, interesting pulling the kind of top 10 on my list. One, I want to kind of say that there's still a lot, especially those front like Oscar contenders. I haven't seen yet. And so I thought 2024, not a lot of like great movies, but I thought a lot of very good movies that were just right on the cusp of being great. That's kind of how I felt like 2024 was.
I'm inclined to agree. I think that there was some more diamonds in the rough than just kind of the standard stuff. Like I'm sure, and I haven't seen everything either, but I don't know if I can muster up 3.5 hours for The Brutalist or, but I have like, I keep a list, and this year, this is including old movies. I watched 185, which is, I think, about average for me. Sometimes I'm watching one a day for a week. Some days I'm watching two or three over the course of a week, maybe even one. It depends on how busy I am. But as far as new movies go, I watched 54 2024 movies. Like that's whether in the theater or, and so I actually, for the first time, I started ranking all 54. And so like, as I'm watching it or as it's done, I go and I put it on my list, and I kind of had here's the tier of just kind of bad movies. And then here's the tier of kind of like, oh, here's the line where I enjoyed them versus not enjoying. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. I did not expect Ghostbusters Frozen Empire to be my worst movie of the year.
Oh, that was your worst one of the year.
That was the worst one. I think I'm finally over. I think I've decided that Dan Aykroyd has a very specific idea on what Ghostbusters should mean to people. And I just don't know if the rest of the world shares that opinion. And I love Ghostbusters. I love the first two. I love them. But I don't know if I hold it in reverence as much as Dan Aykroyd does. But hey, I would do the same thing, you know?
I don't want to get too down the rabbit hole of Ghostbusters and Empire. I mean, is that definitely not near my top 10, but I liked it more than expected because it really was my expectations were pretty low, so it was better than I thought. And so, I didn't track exactly how many I watched in 2024 as films released in 2024. I did. I logged 109 films, but
that's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But you know, a lot. You know,
triple digits, with man.
But a lot for our, you know, this podcast. You know, we're kind of looking back at other movies and stuff like that. So a lot of that, especially for when we wrapped up the rom-com. The 50 best rom-coms, that's where a lot of those were pulled from and stuff like that. But I did watch a lot in December. That we got some time off during the holidays, so that was really great. Why don't we just start off with you want to start off with your number 10?
Number 10.
Yeah.
Number 10 I have is a kind of a horror comedy called Abigail. And so it's about a group of criminals, burglars who go and kidnap the daughter of like a very powerful figure. They don't know who they're just for hire, you know? And it's their job to watch after this little girl, this little ballerina. And then she turns out to be a vampire. And so it's directed by Radio Silence. They did Ready or Not, which was in my top 10 whatever year that came out, and I just am a really big fan of their vibe. and the cast is awesome. Dan Stevens is you know, if they were ever to recast the Princess Bride, Dan Stevens would have been Wesley if he was about 20 years younger. Like, he's our generation's like Cary Elwes, he's not afraid just to get weird. But it's just one of those movies. I took my 15-year-old, you know, to a special screening of it, and it was kind of one of his first like horror movies in the theater. And so it was just really fun to kind of watch that with him.
Yeah, that's fine. I haven't seen it. I feel like it's going to be a lot for your top 10, but I too loved Ready or Not. Like, I think I watched it based on your recommendation, and I loved it. So that's like, I'm sure I really like that movie, but yeah, Ready or Not was, it might have been one of my favorites from that year. Yeah. But yeah, I need to check that out. So my number 10 is kind of, this is the only time I'm doing it. It's actually two movies. It's kind of a tie, but
cheap.
but they're both documentaries, and they're both about people that just played a pivotal role in my adolescence in watching entertainment. The first one is Steve Martin, a documentary, two pieces, and then Jim Henson, Idea Man. So I grew up on all things Martin and Jim Henson and the Muppets. Still appreciate everything that Jim Henson did, contributed everything. Both very well made. They're different documentaries for sure. I would also say both of them, certainly the Steve Martin one, I kind of was curious about, if you didn't love Steve Martin, how much you would like buy into it, because it's long. It's, I think the two pieces together are about 3 hours, but Jim Henson, Idea Man, it was directed by Ron Howard, and so there's a slickness to it. It came out, it's through Disney Plus, and so there's a sharpness to that. But anyway, if anything, it's a celebration of the creative process and two men that just have very much it really explains my comedic sensibilities watching it and stuff like that. And both very accessible. And I think for Steve Martin, I think always had a reputation of being, you can even see it through the documentary, being, I mean, you have his persona on screen, but he seems actually very introverted in life. And I think he used to be really, really guarded. And this one is, he truly kind of lets his guard down a little bit. So it's kind of nice to see. And I'll say with Steve Martin, one of my favorite scenes in the documentary and one of my favorite movies of all time is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And he basically talks about John Candy for a bit and reads like this dialogue scene between the two. That moment in this movie, like, kind of made my whole life. So it was like, it was just a great documentary. So yeah. And I'm a little wary about, there's so many documentaries now, and especially like, you know, especially about athletes. It's like, here's the LeBron James documentary, producer LeBron James, you know. So, but I do think these two actually are to talk about the not so good things as well. So I would check those out. So yeah.
You're gonna be so mad. I have never seen Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh my. That's a must.
It was never in our family's holiday rotation. It just never was. Yeah. And I always am like, man, I need to just find a time to go watch it. But I you know, we like watching movies as a family. And I'm like, I don't know if how appropriate that is for like a 12-year-old. It's probably not any worse than, you know, maybe a little bit more worse than Home Alone in terms of content. But there's a little bit of innuendo. But it's one of my biggest shames in life that I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Yeah. You need to check that out. And I said it on the podcast before. So there weren't many R-rated movies I saw even before I went to college, really. And this movie was like beloved by my family. And there's really only one scene that makes it the R rating, for sure. And so anyway, I routinely watched that scene on mute, basically. Even though with anybody who can read lips somewhat can understand what's being said during that scene. But yeah. Oh, you love it. Love it. It's amazing. So, okay. What's your number nine?
Number nine is Challengers, the thriller. Funny thing, like going back to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the Challenger's trailer played in front of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And I was like, the trailer makes it look like it's just like a three-way the entire time. Like it's just
right.
Like, and so I was always like, well, I was more mad that it played during Ghostbusters because it was like our family and I had to like cover my kids' eyes during the trailer. But then I had read that it's really just about tennis. And so at that point I'm like, okay, when it comes out on Prime, I'll check it out. And then me and Hannah watched it and man, I loved it. I was, I'm a tennis guy. I don't follow it very well, but I appreciate the sport. My brother used to take me out to the, when he was in varsity and just hit balls at me so I can return okay. But just blown away by all three of the actors. Zendaya especially, she can convincingly play an 18-year-old high school student and like a 26, 27-year-old mom. And so there's a lot of just like mental manipulation, and the movie is very much a volley back and forth between it's very much edited like a tennis match. And so, and then the ending took me out of it just a little bit because it kind of ends very abruptly and it doesn't kind of give you the resolution you want. But then after kind of letting it sit, it kind of works. It's a good callback to earlier on where tennis is kind of like a relationship. And so was really, really, really impressed.
Yeah. Well, I won't say too much because it might appear again on the podcast. So, yeah. So my number nine is one of the few movies that I was able to watch that's in the kind of Oscar contention race right now, and that's Conclave. So it's basically behind the scenes of the Catholic Church. The current Pope has unexpectedly died, so it's behind the scenes as these cardinals are trying to elect a new pope. Conclave is like my type of movie. I love the kind of behind the scenes, not that it's exactly like The West Wing or something like that, but dialogue driven, kind of like, oh, you're getting a peek behind the curtain and see how things really operate and that sort of thing. Really strong performances, strong writing, just a good drama. I will say that it, the ending provides a lot to be talked about. I see what they were going for. I actually don't think it was needed. Politics aside of where you lean on things, it was almost like one of those moments where you're like, okay, you were creating something great and you just had to add one more thing to, but overall, I just really liked it. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, but it's also beautiful to look at, just the cinematography and just these, old buildings. And I really liked it.
This is Bo Gatlin, the guy from the Footloose episode. My favorite movie of 2024, Dune Part 2. I actually only made it to the theater 3 times this year, which is way less than usual. And confession time, I may have even watched Dune Part 2 on my iPhone. I know, it's a massive cinematic masterpiece type movie, but honestly, it was still great to watch on the phone. It's just a fun, big world to jump into. And I really liked it.
All right. So number 8 for me was Long Legs. And so that's it's a horror movie directed by Osgood Perkins, who's the son of Norman Bates himself, Anthony Perkins. And every single one of his movies generally has something demonic in it, or more, not even demonic, explicitly the devil. And so, but I couldn't resist it because of Nick Cage, playing Long Legs. And it plays out a lot like The Silence of the Lambs, and then it kind of takes a Lynchian turn into the supernatural. And I've actually, like, when I first saw it, I'm like, the trailers were made it out to be like super scary, and the actress's heart rate raised so much when she saw Nicolas Cage for the first time, which was a little bit mismarketed because Nicolas Cage looks goofy as hell in this movie. But I think it's purely intentional. So I think it's low key comedic. And so I've watched it several times since I first saw it, and it's just shot up my list more and more time. But it's basically just a searching for a serial killer, and you know, he's never at the scene of the crime. There's no semblance of him, no true connection, except for just his notes that link it. And so I don't know if it'll last and be like a Silence of the Lambs type of classic or not, but it's a great kind of slow burn, kind of make you feel cold while you watch it.
Yeah. No, I heard a lot about Long Legs. I haven't watched it yet, but it very much intrigued me. I always think, and we've had this discussion before, I really have to really be to a horror movie, it's got to feel like it has something to it a little more. And that was one I heard a lot about, kind of more psychological. And that really intrigued me. So yeah, I need to check that out. So we're still like right now at my number eight. We're probably like still in the 4-star territory, not 5-star territory. But it's Kinds of Kindness by Yorgos Lanthimos, who is perhaps one of the strangest filmmakers we have right now. If people aren't familiar with him, his other films, Poor Things, who got a lot of Oscar attention last year, The Lobster. Anyway, he is just kind of a one of a kind person who has a very unique point of view. This movie is kind of an anthology of sort. It's essentially 3 different episodes that each are about an hour each. Then each one features the same actors, but they play different characters. And there's kind of a through line between the 3 stories, but they don't really connect. And it's one of those movies that just lends itself to kind of talk to, like, oh, which story was your favorite? Why was it your favorite? This movie, definitely some things work better than others. But I just think, like a lot of his movies, it was one that really stuck with me. And just, it was fun to see Jesse Plemons, why am I just forgetting her name? Emma Stone, Willem Dafoe, Margaret Qualley's in it as well. But just to also see them as different types of characters in each one. And anyway, it's so weird. Like a lot of his films, it's not kind of the film I would like show to everyone. If Whitney watched this movie with me, she probably would like want me to get my head checked of why I enjoy the film. But anyway, that is number 8 for me, and it's on Hulu, so you can easily go seek that one out.
Okay. Yeah, I just watched Killing of a Sacred Deer and for the first time, and like that might be my favorite Yorgos one. So I haven't watched Kinds of Kindness. I started it again, I think, on a plane, and then I realized this is not a plane movie, so I need to see.
It's one of those movies, you know, you're always a little worried of who's sitting next to you and where, you know, they might like see your screen. And yeah, so someone might report you on the plane if they saw you watching that.
Hello, all. This is Kyle Radford, half of the Sometimes Functional Second Best Picture podcast. My favorite movie of 2024 was... gosh, I don't know. Probably Wicked. Who knows? Something that someone's already talked about or will already talk about on this podcast. So I'll go with a documentary I saw that I really loved. Will and Harper is on Netflix. It's a great little documentary about Will Ferrell going on a road trip with a friend of his, Harper Steele, who had recently come out to him as a trans woman. Harper was a former head writer on SNL. They take a road trip across country, and it's just full of warmth and humor and acceptance, and I was a puddle at times, I was laughing at times. It's just a great documentary. And frankly, as someone who hasn't enjoyed anything Will Ferrell's done since probably Stranger Than Fiction, it was nice to see Will step out and do something a little new. So that's my pick for 2024. Nate, thanks for all the great hours of entertainment you've given us with this podcast this last year. I'm excited to listen on in 2025.
Number seven is the polar opposite of Long Legs. It's a movie called Flow. It is a an animated movie created in Blender, and it's from a Latvian filmmaker, and there's no dialogue whatsoever. It's just a cat trying to survive a flood of some sort of event. So it's like Noah's Ark without Noah, in a way where, you know, you don't, there's no explanation that why the world floods, but it forces the cat to jump into a boat, and then other animals drop into the boat. So there's a Life of Pi element to it as well. And so you really just learn, and basically it seems like every single other animal is representative of some sort of like human tendency. So you have like this lemur who's very protective of all of his stuff and doesn't want to share. And then you have like, you know, this, you know, one dog who's just happy to be there, you know, cause he has, and so it kind of, it's, it kind of feels like this parable, and it's really powerful. I was able to take my two kids to the theater for it and held their attention the entire time. It may, I think it's even under 90 minutes. It's not super long, but it won Best Animated Feature at the Golden Globes. And I hope it wins Best, you know, Best Animated Feature at the Oscars. It's just, it's very unique. But again, it's the kind of something that's just kind of under the radar and not super, super popular. And it, but it just, it stuck with me to where I kind of just couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah. I honestly didn't know anything about it until it won that Golden Globes award. So like, what theater did it play in your area?
It was at a Cinemark. Like the Cinemark that's by my house kind of has like, has a lot of like Indian movies and Indian action movies, but sometimes it'll have like these little artisan, you know, features where it may be only playing once or twice. And really, I hadn't even thought about it until I was just like, I wonder if there are any cat movies out right now, because my son, Xander, my 12-year-old, who's in the Doritos commercial, like he loves cats. We can't have one because I'm allergic, but I was like, I wonder if there's a cat movie out right now. And then it was, and I found it was pure serendipity that we were able to catch it in the theater.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. I wish, yeah, it's very, very rare that those type of movies come around in my neck of the woods, unfortunately. So, so my number seven, and we actually, I was, as we were talking, I had to look this up. I don't know even if you remember this, but it's actually a movie we talked about with one another on this podcast, but it's Civil War. So, yeah. Do you even remember that we had, like, when I saw that, I was like, that happened this year. Yeah. But yeah, like
March or April, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I guess I'll encourage people to listen to that episode to really hear all our thoughts. But once again, kind of similar to Kinds of Kindness, just a movie that, I thought about a lot after it was over. Still, you know, still thinking about it, especially I'll just say like after this election cycle, couldn't help but think about it some more, but also loved it because of almost, and we talked about this, like the creative side of not just photojournalism, but anybody who's ever kind of been behind the camera of trying to get that perfect shot. I like that aspect of it. And so, yeah, that's my number seven.
Okay.
Okay, what's it, number six?
Number six is Zoe Kravitz's debut feature, Blink Twice. It's a kind of psychological thriller about these two girls who go to a billionaire's, who was just previously canceled, billionaire's kind of private island, where they get to engage in all sorts of debauchery and drugs and kind of live in the lifestyle. And it's a lot about but there's something powerful in it too, where it talks about like what forgiveness looks like, what forgetting looks like, and how to some people forgiveness is forgetting, because you literally forget what happens. And there's a lot of like, you know, hallucinatory, is that even a word? I don't even know. Imagery. It's got a great cast. It's got Channing Tatum, who, if I had a vote, would be in the supporting actor category, because there's like a monologue that he gives at the end that's like the best he's ever ever been. And I've always been a big Channing Tatum fan, but this kind of to see him play, use kind of his goodwill to play someone who's got a little bit more of a darker arc is it was very subversive in my mind for him. And but Christian Slater's great in it. Kyle MacLachlan shows up. Haley Joel Osment. I mean, like it's got some people that like have kind of faded from the public eye, or who aren't as, you know, obviously as famous as Channing Tatum. But it's just a really well-written, well-made, and I think it's up so high on my list because it's a debut feature for Zoe Kravitz. And she's got a really great understanding of story and pacing and kind of haunting imagery. It's definitely on the nose. I had someone tell me that this is what Promising Young Woman should have been. I really liked Promising Young Woman, but it has a little bit more... And there's some stuff. It's actually it's the first movie where I feel like it kind of earned the trigger warning it shows at the beginning. A lot of times I'm like, anytime there's a TV show where it's like this episode depicts suicide, which then spoils that there's suicide in the episode. But it actually talks about like, you know, power dynamics and, you know, sexual violence. And so it was kind of good for me to kind of get my mind around it beforehand, because it would have been, there's a couple scenes that are pretty uncompromising, I guess is the best way to say it. But it just kind of stuck with me. I saw it and then I had it outside my top 10, and then I saw it again and I had my wife watch it with me and kind of elevated it up a little bit in my top 10.
Yeah. I heard some good things about the movie. I haven't seen it, but yeah, it kind of on the surface, it kind of looked like, I don't know. Basically, I heard that it's much better than maybe what it seems to, what it appears to be if you watch the previews for it. So, yeah, I heard some good stuff about that one. Okay, so my number six, and I'll tell you, I'm a little, I'm kind of on the about it because it obviously seems to be having like two camps with it, but it's Wicked. Musical. And so it's one of those, and I don't know about you. So we do, I think we've been able to go to the theater a little bit more than we used to now that the girls are older, and not just taking them with us, but also just, you know, it's just easier to do maybe like a date night sort of thing. And so it's really hard for me because I do enjoy the theater going experience so much that sometimes I feel like maybe it clouds my judgment of the movie. So, and I just say that because I've listened to a lot of podcasts about Wicked, and, you know, it does seem people love it, but the people that didn't quite connect with it, it's one of those where I like, I hear you. I actually understand why, you know, why you might not have liked it so much. I can maybe see the faults, but I think from a musical standpoint, I just really enjoyed it. Especially Ariana Grande, was the big surprise for me in it. I thought she was really, really good in it, as well as the other actors in it, for the most part and stuff. And so anyway, but it's one of those, I love musicals. If you're not a fan of a musical, I don't know if this is the one I would push on you, but I'm real interested to see what the second part looks like. I feel like it might go into some darker territory. But I mean, I just can't deny, even though I have some faults, that I just got wrapped up in it when we saw it in the theater and just really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, that's my number six. But if somebody were to argue with me about why I shouldn't be on there, I'd be like, I definitely hear what you're saying. So, yeah.
Apologize for your taste, Nathan. You don't owe anyone.
Yeah, I'm just saying, in my lack of films I've seen in 2024, like, I don't know if Wicked would quite be number six, but I just had to go off initial feelings.
Hey everybody, this is Terry Lackey. Jennifer Graham, my sister, and I talked about Silver Linings Playbook earlier this year with Nathan, and it was a lot of fun, but I never want to do it again. I'm on my porch in 16 degree weather in Chicago, so I can keep this nice and short. I saw two movies last year. So between the two, I'm gonna pick Conclave as my favorite movie because I loved the ending and I loved the strength of the nuns. See ya.
Number five, I have Strange Darling. It is a another kind of darker psychological thriller. It's produced and DP'd by Giovanni Ribisi, which is a crazy bit of trivia, but not like it's that hard to find. But it's shot on 35 millimeter film. It's a gorgeous movie, and it's the best way I like to describe it is as if Tarantino did kind of a horror film. Like, I mean, I'm not sure if I would qualify it as straight horror, but essentially it's a story in six chapters, very Tarantino-esque. It starts at chapter three. I'm not sure, but it literally just bounces back and forth. So the context of the movie changes while you're watching it. And but then every chapter you find something else out that just changed everything that you've said before it. So in order, chapters 1 through 6, it's a pretty straightforward movie. But because they bounced around, it's one of the best uses of nonlinear storytelling. And it was actually number one on my list. And then I watched it again last night, and I kind of just had to kind of drop it just a little bit because there was something so captivating about watching it for the first time. And it's a little bit dark. It's got some consensual sexual violence in there that's kind of hard for some people to handle. They're not good people either the two leads in this movie, but Kyle Gallner is an actor that I've always, he's been kind of one of those like indie actors that, I mean, he showed up in the reboot of Scream. He was in Nightmare on Elm Street reboot back in the day, Jennifer's Body. He's kind of like a horror it guy, like a final, and he was in Smile as well. And he plays one of the leads. The other actress is fantastic. I think she's in Reacher, which I haven't watched. But it's essentially just like about these two people who had a one night stand and the fallout that comes from that. And to say any more would spoil it. But it's masterfully put together. And I asked my wife, because my wife watched it and she doesn't love like the darker movies as much. I have to kind of rub her feet during those movies to keep her there. But she was engaged the whole time. You know, she wasn't sure how she felt about it, but she ended up enjoying it. But there's some parts that she couldn't really watch.
Okay. Well, it's funny. I was, as you were talking, I was looking it up because honestly, maybe the name sounds a little familiar, but I didn't know anything about that movie. So anyway, that's always kind of why I like doing it. You always have a movie on the list that I haven't seen. And anytime I've checked it out after, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was so good. So that's going to be on my radar for sure. So yeah, sounds good. We're at number five, is animated film. It's Inside Out 2. If anybody's like a good friend of mine, they know how much I adore, the first Inside Out. It's probably doesn't help that, the main girl in it is roughly about the same age as Hallie, my oldest. So a lot of the things that the first movie hit on and then this one hit on just are like, it's almost like watching my daughter and her friends on screen and like the things that they run into and stuff. But honestly, I was not looking forward to the sequel, actually. Just when I first, I just thought the film was so great. It's like, oh, just leave it like that. Leave it like that. But actually, very surprising, like how they didn't lean. It is like, I think it's own film. I mean, I guess you could say it leans on maybe some of the familiarity of the first one, but it really doesn't even try to re-educate the audience. But just really connected with it. Just found it really funny. I still like the first one a little bit more, but. Yeah, I think a lot of people have seen Inside Out too, so I'm not saying anything that's like rocking the boat here. But that's my number five.
It was number 12 for me. Like, I loved it. Like, I think it's It was such an important seminal movie, the first one, for like my family and how we talked about emotions with our kids and stuff. So nothing will top it, but it was such a worthy continuation of it that it's almost a minor miracle in and of itself.
Yeah. And I think the big thing I've always said with Inside Out, especially before kids, I'm not the expert on kids, but I was never like a kid person. And the first movie really helped me understand this, the makeup of kids, younger kids at age and stuff like that. Like it really, like I learned a lot from it. And the second kind of thing, like I kind of took like, oh yeah, it just, these two movies have actually, I almost like framed certain interactions and conversations because of, you know, I almost see the different emotions in somebody else's head, you know, when interacting with them. So I just think it's to have that kind of impact.
Hey, I'm Catherine Everett. I was on the You've Got Mail episode, and my favorite movie of 2024 was Wicked, because, hello, Wicked. No, huge musical theater fan. I have loved Wicked for 20 years, since 2004 when the musical came on Broadway. So 20 years I have been waiting for this movie. No, not really. I had low expectations, but I thought they nailed it. It's beautiful. 5 stars. 5 stars for Wicked.
Number four, I have Hitman, directed by Richard Linklater. Starring Glenn Powell. I had always been a Linklater guy, but I've just come to really appreciate Glenn Powell. And so I felt this kind of was like a coming out party for him. The script is a little rudimentary, I suppose. It definitely feels like a, you know, I know Glenn Powell has a writer's credit on it. You know, it's definitely pretty cookie cutter in terms of how, you know, they talk about the id and the ego, and then they talk about, and then it's him kind of living that part out. So it's very straightforward in that sense, but it was just star power for me. It's like sometimes where you're like, man, that movie, that dude's just a star. And the actress too, like she's also in Blink Twice, but this movie is just pure chemistry. And I just, it's kind of like how you are with Wicked sometimes, where there's like, I know objectively it may not be a top 10 movie or say, but like every time I watched it, I just smiled. It just kind of, it moves, it pops, it crackles, and I just enjoy watching it. So it kind of, you look past any, it's weird how like you can look past flaws in movies you want to like, as opposed to movies that like, oh, well, I can pick this movie apart if I really want to, and you kind of feel like a douchebag for doing it. But when it's a movie that you just vibe with, like don't underestimate vibes. Like vibes are a very important part of the movie going process and experience. And so I'm not ashamed. You know, you may be ashamed to have Wicked at number six. I'm not ashamed of having him.
Yeah, no, actually, I have actually seen Hitman because, I know. I'm a big Linklater fan as well, and really ended up enjoying the movie, watching it. And I don't know, I don't think you could even say it's a fault, but I was a little surprised how it took me a bit to get into it. But then there was a moment about halfway through where, I mean, I was hooked in and I was like, I can't wait to see what happens. And you're right about, I'm a huge Glenn Powell fan, but the chemistry between them, I mean, it's just off the charts. It's so good. And it actually, I haven't compiled like my favorite scenes from 2024, but the iPhone scene with the notes app, I'll just leave it at that, is one of the best scenes I think from this year, just from a comedic level and how to move the plot forward and everything like that. So yeah, Hitman definitely very entertaining. And I think people should check it out for sure. So my number four film is actually probably one of the most enjoyable experiences I had in the theater, but Whitney and I went and saw The Fall Guy, and that's my number four. So to say, we actually caught it on its tail end of its run in the theater. And I think another thing for 2024, I don't know if you vibe with this, but I feel like a lot of films I saw just really reminded me of the 90s movies that we grew up on. And this, it was certainly that. The blending of the action and the comedy just kind of almost reminded me of something like a Con Air or like a Face Off or something like that. But The Fall Guy is also very, it knows what it's doing. It's very like tongue in cheek. And so, Ryan Gosling is great in it. So funny. And I love it's, it works as an action movie. It works as a comedy for sure. And then it also is a movie about making movies, which is a lot of fun. And it that's a lot to handle. And it somehow just balances all of that out so well. And yeah, we loved it. And it was actually probably one of the few times, like I think when it was available on digital, we purchased it and like watched it again. And so just purely, I mean, one of those popcorn movies, like, you know, just pure, just entertainment, like just getting relaxed. So yeah, The Guy is up there for me.
Oh, buddy, you're going to be so mad at me again. I had it at number 10 of the year for me.
Really? It seems like this would be your type of movie.
You know what? Maybe. But I think for me, it just felt so algorithm based. Like it was like, all right, let's get, you know, hot male star one, Ryan Gosling, hot male star, Emily Blunt. And for some reason, it just everything felt too much to me. And I'm mad at myself because I think I know a lot of people that really enjoy it. So I'm not being snooty about it, but I was just like, it just didn't. I think I was more upset that Emily Blunt kept throwing this dude into the wall, like right after, you know, not even a year removed from like breaking his back. I was like, that's just mean. I don't like her. And at that point, it's a negative vibe that I couldn't shake. And I'm sorry.
Hey, that's all right. I know that's what I think I liked. Like, I felt like it even was saying like, this is not real life. And so that's kind of what I liked about it. But anyway.
Hi, I'm Phil Keith. I was on episode 90, The Matrix. My favorite movie of the year was also the best time I had in a theater all year. It was a film that checked a lot of boxes for me. Visceral close-up shots and extreme sounds of a man eating shrimp. Needles poking skin. Teeth falling out. Failure to launch dates with people from one's past. And smashed dreams of being young again. I am, of course, talking about The Substance, starring Demi Moore, in the comeback role for the ages. She is phenomenal as a woman obsessed with doing anything to get that youthful body back, including giving birth to Margaret Qualley, who's also a lot of fun here. Every time I thought the movie couldn't get any grosser, it did. And then it did it again and again, and I found myself laughing out loud in a late afternoon matinee with about a dozen other bewildered filmgoers. In a word, it was sublime. I wouldn't recommend it to just everybody, and I suspect a lot of people will be reviled by it, having been hoodwinked into seeing it because they hear Demi is incredible. And yes, she will win the Academy. It's The Substance, ladies and gentlemen. Activate, stabilize, and switch. And remember, you are one.
Number three is The Substance.
Okay, yeah. I can't tell you, I'll say before you start talking about, I have not seen The Substance, surprise, right? But also I would say it is the film that people have texted me the most about, have you seen The Substance yet? When are you going to do The Substance? So I'm going to have to cover it soon. So
I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I don't know how you are with body horror.
I mean, it's not shy about this is a body horror movie. And I mean, just leading with that is just like, you know, that's not going to be like, oh, okay, I'm present play.
So here's the thing. So I watched it by myself in the theater, and I was like, this is one of the more insane movies I've seen, but it's so well done that there's something strangely accessible about it. And so, you know, for your listeners, it's about Demi Moore. He kind of plays a Jane Fonda-esque, like, Hollywood starlet, kind of at the end of her career. She overhears Dennis Quaid, who's incredibly disgusting in it. They're going to replace her. And so then she gets connected with this kind of mysterious company that offers her the substance, which creates a younger version of her. And then the younger version, you know, that version gets 7 days out in the real world while Demi Moore is like on an IV in her bathroom. And then they have to switch every 7 days. Well, then the younger version, I won't spoil like too much, starts getting jealous or starts getting opportunistic and starts taking days away from Demi Moore's days, which you're not supposed to do. So then when Demi Moore wakes up, there's some more body horror kind of elements there. So there's something very darkly comedic about it. It's really like a modern day telling of like the, you know, the, is it the Portrait of Dorian Gray? I'm not 100% sure, where like the painting ages, but that person never does. So it's all about vanity, what aging looks like in Hollywood for women versus men, and just the addiction of fame and relevance. And so it's so rich thematically. And so, like, again, I sat my wife down because I'm like, hey, and I was taking a risk here. I'm like, I want you to watch this movie. It's insane, but I think you'll really like it. And so for the first about 75% of the movie, she's like, I'm in. This is so unique. It's so different. There's something funny about it to where it's not super, you know, it's still horrific, but it's kind of like The Fly, like Cronenberg's The Fly too, but just with a little bit more tongue in cheek. But then the last like 25% of the movie, like, my wife's like, I'm lost. Like, not lost, but she's like, I'm kind of out. Yeah. Because it goes, yeah. And you kind of have to, though. Like, you can't slam on the brakes, in, you know, right before the last act. So it goes bonkers crazy to the point where actually that's one reason why it's not number one for me, even though it'd be a worthy number one for me. But it just goes so crazy and so hard, and it has to. And so as long as you kind of take it as this is a comedy about this. And I don't know, you know, because, you know, you have like teeth falling out, you have like fingers falling out, like it's very grotesque in that sense. But there's almost like a bit of tongue in cheekness that I think makes it a little bit more accessible than some of those kind of gross for the sake of gross movies. And I actually went to go take Jackson, my oldest, to Wolfman, which is also kind of like the classic Universal Wolfman story, mm-hmm. but old more through body horror. And it just doesn't touch the substance. Like, you can't do body horror anymore unless you top the substance, which I don't see any movie doing for a long time.
Huh. Okay. Yeah, I have to see it. okay. So my number three, I would say, is quite a surprise for me. It's a documentary on Netflix, but it's the Mendez brothers. Yeah, there we go. Once again, I don't know, second watch, I feel the same way, but I mean, everybody, I'm not going to rehash the story of them, but the story of these brothers and basically the murder of their parents. I mean, we're roughly about the same age, but I mean, I just grew up watching the Saturday Night Live sketches. I grew up around all the tabloids and stuff like that. And really, to have this documentary, it really does reframe. And I think it's a great documentary. I actually think it toes the line pretty well of not basically letting the view decide themselves, like basically how they would judge these cases and stuff. And especially now as a society, we just understand and just essentially like child sexual abuse just – back then in the 90s, just when that was brought up, people just tend to, like, you know, talk it away, you know. And so anyway, but it also is interesting because it still doesn't take away the fact that they just gruesomely murdered two people, you know. And so it just brings up a lot of questions. And so I know a lot's almost kind of happened because of this documentary coming out. I didn't watch the fictional series that actually was also on Netflix either, so I can't speak to that. I'm never going to take Ryan Murphy's his name, right? I'm never going to take Ryan Murphy's framing of history as real. It was an amazing documentary. And I think especially once again being younger when everything was happening, now seeing it kind of more through adult eyes, I just thought it posed a lot of questions. And it was one of those, I started late and like, I didn't even have plans to finish it. I was like, oh yeah, this will be my kind of movie of the week, so to speak. And it just had me hooked in. I ended up finishing it and staying up way too late, but it was really good. So yeah.
Isn't it funny how, you know, cause I grew up, you know, around the same time, you know, I mean, we were roughly the same age, I believe, but, all those 90s crime incidents, Menendez brothers, OJ, Waco, Branch Davidian,
you know, JonBenet.
JonBenet, like all that stuff. You know, I remember how I felt about the Menendez brothers. I've been like, oh, they're guilty, you know, and that's it. OJ, yeah. Because he's OJ. Those Branch Davidians were really crazy, which they were. But in watching, like, in being an older person now and seeing how the media framed certain things, it is funny. Of looking back at all these things and being like, okay, there's a lot more to this story than we were told. And it kind of makes you not trust anything anymore. but interesting how, and like, cause we didn't have 24-hour news cycle back in the '90s. It was all, you know, we're just watching, Peter Jennings and Ted Koppel. And we just assume all telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Not part.
Yep.
As liars, but just that's, I think you get my point. Sorry.
No, I totally get what you're saying there. So, yeah.
Nathan, the movie that we talked about was Poor Things with Emma Stone, and she, I think, won an Oscar for it. But my favorite movies this year were Wicked, My Old Ass, and Conclave.
Number two, I have The Wild Robot.
And oh, nice.
It reminds me a lot of Flo in the sense that there's a lot of nonverbal storytelling, which I'm kind of a sucker for, especially in animation. I mean, nothing really tops the first, you know, 13 minutes of Up or whatever that is. But it's just a really sweet story. And it was my son's favorite book. And we were able to go see it for his birthday and took all his friends. And it's just one of those movies. I don't really weep a whole lot, but it was just a movie that just kind of made me weep. And you know, the struggles of parenting and being able to relate to the kids that you have that aren't even necessarily biologically yours, but just the idea of family and teaching someone. And so my youngest, he's 12 and he has ASD, he's on the spectrum. And anytime that there's like a, you know, so we've had some issues with like social understanding and kind of understanding and, you know, asking why, and that's what the robot does. I'm not saying it's a stand-in for autism, but there is a relatability there for us that kind of makes it a little more personal where, you know, you're having to teach these basic like human, you know, ticks and behaviors to someone who doesn't automatically understand them. They kind of have to be taught and nourished and developed. And so it was just one of those movies where it has such a big, big heart. And I'm just a sucker for big heart movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, we went and saw that in the theater. it was on my honorable mention list. Honestly, like, kind of a hard sell for me. Like the previews didn't necessarily like draw me in, but we had an opportunity as a family to go see a movie and I had heard all the great things about it. And so, yeah, really enjoyed it. I mean, beautiful to look at as well. And so, yeah, if you're a parent, it kind of hits all the feels, so to speak. But yeah, really interesting. And I thought it was maybe going to be a shoe-in for best animated feature, but then this other movie on your list came by and it's kind of shaking things up. So, but yeah. Lots of strong animated movies this year, you know, with Inside Out 2 as well and stuff. So awesome. Okay. So my number two, let's say another huge surprise. Also probably another one that if somebody argued with me, like, I can't believe this is a top 10. I, you know, once again, maybe like I hear you, but it's the best Christmas pageant ever. And so a part of it is also kind of maybe personal feelings, not because of this necessarily, but it's a book that Whitney like grew up on. And we've read it to our kids. And that's not what we've always liked the story. It's actually a very faithful telling of the story. I mean, it was even seen. I was like, that's completely how I visualized everything in my brain. It's set in the early 80s. So maybe there's a tie-in for like, this is like what the world looked like to us at those kids' ages and stuff. But I think the main reason, I think it works as a film. I really like the style. I like the humor. I like the drama. I have always said, and it's almost unfair, like I haven't seen tons of the faith films that are out there that kind of have that moniker, but they're not my favorite. To say it becomes preachy is kind of a understatement for me. I don't know even if the movie is in that category. I don't know much about the filmmakers or anything like that. But to me, this movie is not even so much about church, even though it is. But it perfectly embodies, I think, the human spirit and really why people are connected to faith and why churches exist. And I won't make this like a complete dissection of my faith crisis or whatever like that, but there's been a lot of things in the past couple of years that have just made me not, I don't want to say not as drawn to the church, but wary is probably a better word to use. And to me, this movie just perfectly encapsulates, honestly, and I don't make this a religious podcast at all, but really why I believe in God and why I believe in Jesus. And it's to treat the least of those as you would want to be treated. And so much of that has been lost in this world. And I know that's always been the issue, but I think we've lost sight of what church is supposed to be. And this movie just champions that spirit. And so anyway, that's my number two. All that to say, it makes it sound heavy than it is, but it is sweet. It's funny. And just even from a Christmas film, holiday film standpoint, it's going to be on the rotation now of, you know, with Elf and along with some of those other films. So there you go.
Hi, this is Brandon McMinn. I was on the When Harry Met Sally podcast episode with my podcast partner, Kyle Radford. Best movie of 2024. Honestly, I think I only saw two films that were released in 2024. One was Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal, and the other was Fall Guy. So I'm going to definitely go with Fall Guy being my best pick for 2024. I think Gosling's kind of having himself a little renaissance. Emily Blunt was wonderful, and it was just a fun little flick. So yeah, that's about as good as it got for me. I'm a little behind on movies for 24, but maybe one day I'll catch up. But anyway, love being on the podcast. Movies Are Life. Go check it out. Thanks so much, Nathan. Bye.
Hey, do you mind if I kick off and tell you my number one, just because you already talked about it. So my number one is Challengers, and you hit on every reason why I liked it. You know, it's one of those like it's like one of the most like sexual films you'll see without ever actually like having a lot of sex in it. But I just loved how it was edited. Like you mentioned, the way the actors actually play the different ages that they're supposed to be, you believe it. These actors just play off of each other perfectly. Loved the soundtrack. I totally get to what, you know, and Whitney and I watched it together. When it ends, it's kind of like, it's, we were like, oh, really? Like that's kind of how it's going to end. But then it's also another movie. As you can see, I always like movies that have me thinking about it afterwards, but like we finished the film and later afternoon, we're like, you know, that actually was like a perfect way to end that movie. And we just kind of talked about it and talked about like, wait, what, you know, why and all that kind of stuff. I loved it. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was innovative. Funny. I mean, it's really not like a pure comedy, but it was just all the elements of film working together. Once again, another kind of peek behind the curtains of world of tennis. Apparently, I listened to a podcast, and really, it does hit on. I don't know if you know this, but like the thing, and it's outside of Applebee's, and it was like, I was like, that's really weird that like this Applebee's in, I think it was Cincinnati, is like being featured. But apparently I heard a podcast and that actually is like a kind of famous place of these, like where tennis players have gone because it's real close to this tournament. So I think there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that's like kind of a real, you know, real life type of situation. And so, Challengers, my point. And I'm glad, I think because it released, it'd be interesting if it like released in the fall versus the spring when it did. It's gotten, you know, the soundtrack's gotten some attention. Zendaya has as well a little bit, but I wonder if it did come out in the fall, if it may be getting a little bit more Oscar buzz, but anyway, that's my number one. So, yeah. Okay. All right. So your number one.
My number one movie this year is a horror movie. No shocker, called Oddity. Oddity. So it's kind of like, and so it's a movie that someone just told me about. It wasn't something that like, I think I may have seen a trailer for it and I heard some reviews that it was really good, but it's this movie about this woman who is kind of out in the, she's married. It's actually not about her, but the opening scene is this woman who moved out kind of in the middle of nowhere with her doctor husband who kind of runs the insane asylum, you know, closer to town. And the opening of the movie, it's such a great open, is you have this woman who's kind of moving in, kind of going in and out her, you know, their kind of loft, almost lodge house. She goes back to her car. She goes back in. She shuts the door and locks it. Then she gets a knock at the door. And this creepy dude with like a glass eye is like, hey, while you were getting the stuff out of your car, someone went inside and you're in danger. You need to let me in so I can help you. And so it's that kind of those brilliant hypothetical ghost stories where, and honestly, that's the first scene. So then you find out that woman, you know, died and her twin sister is blind, but can kind of, she has like a clairvoyance. I'm not sure that's the word, but like she can touch something and kind of see what happened to that, you know, whatever happened to that object. And so, and she's kind of weird and kind of eccentric. And, so the, you know, the doctor's, you know, the doctor who's the widower now, comes to her and says, hey, your sister, you know, this is something that was left. Can you touch it and see kind of what happened? And so the rest of the movie is this kind of blind, she runs an oddity shop. So she specializes in odd things. She goes to the house and sets up this giant mannequin made of wood, and I'm oversimplifying it, and it's just creepy. And so, you know, does this mannequin, like, we don't really know anyone's like agenda at first other than just this lady's creepy. And it's just a really well-told story of, and it's essentially like a murder mystery with a little bit of like a supernatural twist. And it's very simple, essentially one location, all dialogue driven. The actress that plays the sister in the beginning also plays her twin sister. And you kind of don't recognize them until, you know, like it's, if you look, it's there, but it's just a really great ghost story. And it just kind of slowly unravels and you find out everything. And it's got a wonderful payoff at the end, an even better last shot of the movie. And again, it's one that I was able to show my wife. My wife loved it. And it's not super gory, although it's more of a creepy, kind of reminded me of Mike Flanagan and the Haunting of Hill House, kind of like it's a very smart ghost story. So that would be my number one. Like, I know that and Strange Darling are kind of more fringe, they're not necessarily mainstream, but there's nothing really fringe about them. Like, they're just really, really well done stories that didn't get the wide release. And so that was one I watched three times, and I just love it each time.
Yeah. Once again, I was looking that up as you were talking because I wasn't super familiar. And with both of those movies, like the percentages of them, wherever they're pulling from, Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, is like super high. But yeah, it seems like, yeah, you're not the only one with that high opinion. So yeah, definitely have to check that out. As man, all these creepy movies, I don't know if I can do it. I know I should have, I meant to ask this of you, but you may not, and it's okay. Did you have any honorable mentions that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I have them all ranked. So I have like a list. So I'll just kind of go through I'll just do like a laundry list if you want.
Yeah, do like, it real fast. Yeah.
My honorable mention starting at number 11 is I have Furiosa, which I really liked. It's essentially Act 1 and 2, and Fury Road is Act 3. Inside Out 2, Dune Part 2, The First Omen was really, really good, better than it had any right to be. And then I have more like the Deadpool and Wolverine, Planet of the Apes, Alien Romulus, Quiet Place, I had Civil War, Carry On. I really liked Carry On, which is that Jason Bateman. It's so stupid.
Pause there. Yeah, I actually watched Carry On around Christmas time or whatever. Once again, that's what I'm talking about. Completely reminded me of a 90s movie, Carry On. Oh, did
100%. And I'm all for that. There was one that I don't know if I can recommend, but it's called Hundreds of Beavers, and it's a black and white silent film, independent, and it's just like a live action Looney Tunes. It essentially needs to be a short film. I think it's not like super, super great, but it's just kind of like, I was able to watch it with my kids, no problem. And it's essentially PV, but it's basically just one dude who's like a lumberjack, and there are all these beavers, but they're all just men in beaver costumes. It's not actually beavers. So it really is like a live action Looney Tunes. I would check that out. I Move, which is produced by Sam Raimi, which is kind of a fun, like, girl gets this injected by a serial killer with this thing that'll stop her from being able to move. And so she has 20 minutes before it takes root into her system. That's kind of a fun little thriller. And then a weird one. This is all my last one of ones I liked, but it was The Greatest Night in Pop. And it was the documentary about We Are the World, and just loved watching it. Like, it's just so fascinating seeing Bob Dylan trying to interact with these massive stars, but they're like, hey, we have to have Bob Dylan in there because he's like the one guy who actually believes in these causes, but he just has no. And to have Stevie Wonder like basically mime Bob Dylan's voice to encourage him on how to sing We Are the World was just priceless.
Yeah, no, I agree. That documentary definitely, I really enjoyed it. And similar, I watched, it was called Yacht Rock, a documentary, DOCK, but it's on HBO Max, but very similar kind of vibe. But really, I mean, and I'm not a musician, but it's really like all my musician friends, I've told them to watch these two films because it's so much about the process. And, but also it's a very approachable theme. It's not too like, it's very accessible. That's a way to say it, but yeah, that's a good one. So a couple that were on, well, yeah. These were technically 2023 movies. I just was late to them, but I had to give them a shout out. They would have definitely been on my list last podcast, but The Holdovers, I loved. You Hurt My Feelings, absolutely loved. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one.
Okay, I would love for you to see it because the premise is basically, there's a husband and wife, and the husband doesn't like the wife's new book. And so it's that tension there. Really good. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in that one. And Zone of Interest, which like blew me away. Anyway, I had to give a shout out to those movies.
I really wanted those, but I never could like get the muster to watch Zone of Interest. It just seemed like it was nightmare fuel for me.
You know, it it's PG-13, so it doesn't
actually show you, but
the other ones I had listed, The Wild Robot was one. Funny enough, it's called Out of My Mind. It's a Disney Plus movie, and it's by far, it is not like a five star movie, but way better than I thought it was going to be. But actually, pretty moving. I'm just getting older, more sentimental, I think. And so, any of these movies that are like the champion of the human spirit and being nice to other people, I really get drawn to.
Yeah. So, right, kinds of kindness was about that, right?
Right. but I have Will and Harper, the documentary with Will Ferrell and his friend Harper, who has transitioned. And so a lot's been talked about that. I have, this was another one, like just Here by Robert Zemeckis, with Tom Hanks and Robin Wright. One of those films, lots of things not great about it, but just the sheer audacity of the concept of it. And that there are some things that are pulled off on it. It just surprised me. So anyway, Here's on there. This was Max. It's a documentary, An American Bombing, The Road to April 19th. It's about the Oklahoma City bombing. It's a little bit more of a different take. And I don't mean this in a bad way. It does get into the just tragedy and the sentimentality of it, but it's more of a kind of a look of like what led up to it. So anyway, very good. And then this also, I'd be shocked if you haven't seen it, but did you see It's What's Inside on Netflix?
No.
Dude, okay. This is your type of movie. What kind of a body swapping? It's okay.
Yeah. I think I've seen the thumbnail, and it's like a bunch of teenagers kind of looking like yeah. I've seen the thumbnail, but I have not. It's What's Inside. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mark, you have to see this. This is your type of movie. Like essentially these group of young 20 something him shows up at this party, and he has this device where they can like body swap, and he makes it a game of like, oh, let's guess who's in whose body. But of course it becomes a little bit more than that. And so it's not it's more psychological. It's not really a horror movie, but I loved the fact of like you have to pay attention to it, but also the actor and body other actors, so you start thinking about how they approach that, but also the editing style of it. You'll love it. It's right down your alley. You have to watch that. So yeah, that's I think two very different lists from us, but very solid as always. Like I've mentioned, I've got a lot of movies to watch now because Mark suggested them. So, and if Whitney ever gets mad at me for watching them, I'm just gonna be like, Mark told me to. I had to watch them.
Yeah, give Whitney my apologies.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for doing this again to recap the year. And hopefully, as always, you'll be able to do next year, hopefully. And then just one last time, where do people go and vote for Charades, your Dorito?
Charades. You go to doritotrash.com. There's three commercials there. You don't want to watch the other ones. Just watch Charades. You don't even have to watch Charades. You can just vote for Mark B. You'll see our friend Tyler Johnson holding up a chip, and you can just vote every day, once a day until January 28th. So that's, depending on when this goes live, about a week left.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited. You're going to win. So, and I promise, I won't hit you up for money. I'm going to be happy for you.
No, I won't even. I'm not even going to take calls for the first year if it happens.
I know. How are we going to like schedule it for next year?
No, all it is, I have told people like, look, I'm just going to make the financial advisor be the bad guy. Okay. Like I don't have access to it. It's gone. I don't have it. It's all in the market. I can't touch it. Sorry. I totally would give you 20 grand because you voted for me.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it. And here's the 2025. Hope there's some good gems on in there that aren't quite as dark and scary.
I'll make a Nathan friendly list next year.
Okay. Yeah, just throw on Disney Plus, I guess, and like you'll just yeah, that story about a girl who can't speak in a wheelchair, that will be in his top 10.